I love some of these episodes where I get to bring somebody with a really unique personal story and a really unique professional story, creating a midlife leap where they are bringing brand new purpose to how they show up in the world and how they impact the lives of others. Today, I'm introducing you to a friend of mine of over 30 years, and her professional story is a unique one. You're going to hear about her health story, which involves cancer. Twice. You're going to hear about her devotion to the tools and the systems that really helped make a difference between cancer bout one and cancer bout two. I promise you, this is not a depressing episode, but you're going to maybe hear about some strategies and some tools and some workshops that she does that help women with chronic pain and chronic illness and people have gone through things that she has to have a different framework on how they get through their most challenging times. I think it's going to be a really interesting story for you to listen to. And even if you're not one of those people who's facing chronic pain or illness, you may know somebody who is. And what you might be hearing about today could very well help someone you love. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Vines. One of the things I've loved about Surfing the Quicksand is my ability to bring some unique people to my audience. And these are women who have blended personal experience and professional experience into a very new purpose. And when I'm lucky, they're people who really impact lives in very significant ways. And today is one of those people. I'm thrilled to bring to you today Kate Jackson, who I've known for decades. Many, many decades. And she has a story that's so unique, but I think you're going to get a lot out of it. And if you are someone that what she does these days helps, or you know someone who this can help, you're going to want to tune in to hear more about ways to work with Kate. Kate has this really unique, deep experience in the Enneagram, which is a personality test. I'm minimizing it, but we're going to talk a lot about what she does with the Enneagram in helping women with chronic illness, chronic stress, chronic pain find advocacy and agency in their own personal health journeys. Again, really unique, but very profound. And I'm really excited to bring Kate's personal story and professional story and maybe learn more about the Enneagram because I know this much. And we're going to find out more about how she's helping women's lives be stronger and healthier and just more positive. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks, Kathy. What a lovely introduction, and it's so fun to be here with you.
We've known each other for many decades and have been in good touch throughout it. And so I know some of your personal story, but I think I don't know that I know a lot of women who have dealt with things on a health front in the same way that you have. So, can you start by sharing? Let's start on the personal side before we get into the Enneagram.
Sure. Yeah, my big change in life occurred when I was 39, and I was going through life in a typical fashion, working, and was having some pain in my side that would double me over for like maybe a minute at most. It was just really random times I'd be walking or something, and I always chalked it up to some kind of like something didn't agree with me. I'd always had a sensitive stomach as a kid. And I think it was the third time that happened that I thought I better go see the doctor because my father had recently passed away from pancreatic cancer, and I just thought it would be prudent for me to just make sure this wasn't anything more than it might be. And unfortunately, in very quick fashion, it was discovered that there was something in me through scans that they did, but they didn't know what. And so within 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks, I went from going to the doctor to find out if there was something wrong with me to being in surgery, major surgery, without them quite knowing what they were in surgery for, except they assumed that it was some kind of metastatic cancer. But they couldn't tell me anymore. So Understandably, I was a little bit fearful. I was shocked, and I went into the surgery in a way that was very fear-based. And it took a month for them after the surgery to figure out what kind of cancer it was. And it turned out to be a very rare stage four cancer. So there wasn't a lot of information about it either. And the recovery was supposed to be about 8 weeks. And frankly, it turned into 3 years for me because my body just went through such significant changes from that surgery. And was I was struggling to figure out how do I recover more than just physically. And so I think, my experience with it was conventional medicine was fabulous in terms of probably saving my life. However, I was struggling greatly after that from a emotional, mental, spiritual standpoint that I just didn't even understand how to help myself with. So that was kind of the shift for me of my old life to my new life in a way. And then there was this period of time in between that was sorting that out. That took about 6 years, honestly, for me. But it was a profound shift once I started moving into that and finding ways to heal that were beyond just conventional medicine.
So that puts you at about mid-40s.
Right.
And where is your life taking you at that point?
So I, for 3 years after my surgery, I had horrific brain fog. That was probably my most difficult situation that I was dealing with. And honestly, nobody told me. So I had gone through a full hysterectomy because of my cancer diagnosis. And I was walking through life just very kind of like a zombie state, and I didn't understand why. But of course, all my chemicals in my body were had been removed in a way that now my body was trying to figure out how to be. And so I was really suffering. I couldn't work. The only thing I could do was paint. I was literally painting people's houses because it's all I could muster. And I was desperate to try to find things that would help. And I finally asked a neighbor of mine about somebody that she had talked about before, and it was a kinesiologist. I didn't know what kinesiology was, I had no idea. But she said, she'd helped her brother-in-law, and I said, I'm desperate. I'll try anything. And I went into this woman's house, and she had me bring food, put it under my tongue, and hold my arms out. And she would press down on my arms, depending on what food was under my tongue. I didn't swallow it or anything. It was muscle testing, essentially, is what she was doing. And I was rolling my eyes, thinking, this is, cuckoo. This is never going to work. This is never going to tell me anything. And lo and behold, within moments of putting certain food under my tongue, my arms went down and I had no energy. And so it was like this light bulb moment for me of going through all these different foods. And within 2 weeks of changing my diet, I felt better than I'd felt probably my entire life. I had more energy. I always say it was like a veil lifted up over my face, and I was like, I'm back in the world again. There is color in the world again for me. And it was such a profound change for me within literally 2 weeks. And I'd been suffering for 3 years that I thought, what else is out there? What else is nobody talking about that could help other people that are in my position? And I just took this deep dive into, okay, I'm going to try these other alternative modalities of healing, which eventually then led me into a master's in integrative health and well-being coaching program because I just thought, this is too important to not pursue. And anything I can do to try to shift my direction and what I'm doing and the purpose I have, I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. So that mid-40s, new career, going back to school, never my plan, but it all was for good. And so it was really that was a time of big shift for me of being able to take some of the modalities I'd tried and then learning about them from a true scientific standpoint. I mean, that was part of the integrative coaching program was like, here are some these other ways that you can bring in healing for people in working with them.
And I feel like you and I were in very kind of close touch around this time because I was launching my coaching business and world and things, and you were getting into a coaching space, and we were both kind of figuring it out together and telling our stories and understanding how to find clients and work with clients and building a business around trying to help others, right? In that way, we're very much aligned. But the concept of how do I impact people, right? It's one thing to say I'm in integrated health and wellness, and I want to coach people and help people. But it's another thing, we're like, how do I get people to understand what I can do for them and where I can take them from A to Z? What do you feel back then, right? Because now we're talking 10 years ago. What do you feel like your journey or your focus and purpose was professionally at that point of time? Who were you trying to work with, and what were you trying to help them with?
Well, interestingly, when I was going through that program, when I started that program, it was a 2.5 year program. My thought was I'm going to come out and work with people with cancer. Just because I felt like I've had this experience and I'm now 7 years out of it. And so I have some reflective time to be able to apply all my experience between having that cancer diagnosis and now, so that it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. And so that was my intent. And a year into my program, I had a recurrence with my cancer. So I had a recurrence 7 years later, which for people that are familiar in the cancer realm, you kind of think 5 years out, I'm good. And that was my perspective too, was okay, I've surpassed 5 years, I'm probably fine. And it was really interesting timing because I'd literally just finished my first year of my master's program. So I had all this information, all these new tools, all this new experience that now I was going to apply to the second round of a major surgery for cancer. And it was a dramatic, dramatic change for me in terms of how I went through my first cancer and my second cancer. So I think that really propelled me in reflecting upon that experience of like, okay, now what can I offer people? It doesn't necessarily have to be just cancer patients. It can be people that are all walks of life, but experiencing something and talking about that resilience in a different way to frame a difficult situation so that you can go through it with more agency and empowerment rather than a victim of it or feeling like, all hope is lost.
I don't have that kind of personal experience with cancer to have known anyone, I think, besides you, who gets past that time frame and thinks they're in the clear, and then suddenly they get a very serious diagnosis all over again. Hearing you talk about the fact that you'd gone through healing, or you've gone through such a healing journey already, and now you're facing it again. Can you recall for yourself, right? What was some of the biggest framework changes that got you through cancer 2.0 at that point?
Well, I have a distinct memory of finding out that my cancer had come back. So, I'm a type of person that's pretty private. So I didn't want to tell anybody I was getting tested, none of it. Because, I just didn't frankly want to believe that it could be possible it was coming back. And so when I received the call, that it had come back, I can remember distinctly being in my house and I just collapsed on my couch and started crying because I was just like, I cannot believe, like, I haven't felt this good in so long. I just come back from this amazing trip in Switzerland that was 10 days of hiking. Like, I was felt strong, and I just it was unfathomable to me that this had come back. And within, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes or less, there was this whole shift in my body of reframing this of being like, wait a minute. You have a completely different set of tools right now. I also happen to have just gone through my divorce. So my divorce had been final maybe a month before. And so I know timing is everything. And so it was going to be different because A, I was in a different state. I had a new oncologist. I was no longer married. So I was living by myself. Everything that could have been different for me pretty much was different for me. And I had this moment sitting on that couch of going, okay, wait, I can do this differently. And for whatever reason, I had this strange mindset that came through to me, which was as women, we tend to outlive men. So even if we are married, even if we do have a partner, it is likely that at some point we're going to be on our own and have some kind of hurdle, whether it's health or otherwise. And so, how can I set myself up to go through this, and maybe that will help somebody else down the road. That's just the the mindset that came through to me. And it kind of gave me this weird purpose that I think was really helpful for me of like, okay, let's break this down into a way that might create meaning out of it.
It's the idea to analyze and say everything is different. So everything can be different,
Yes.
right? And say, oh, I'm not what I've faced before, everything at my disposal, everything I was up against, all of that is different. So how do I look at this as a fresh experience? But it sounds like you did it from a very much a position of strength and courage and kind of an inventory of what you have that's going for you differently now, even though divorced and new medical team you weren't com necessarily comfortable with right away and other things like that.
Yeah, and I would even say, even if you think everything is the same, like if none of that had changed, it's still 7 years later or whatever it is. I mean, there are things that are different. So there is always an opportunity to go, okay, let's press the restart button and see if I can do this in a different way that might be more supportive. I think that was for me the thing of like, okay, how could I do this in a way that sets me up differently? That will be beneficial to me because the first time, frankly, and I think this is often what happens, and it's hard to not have it happen, is I was on my back feet, like, oh my God, I'm in big trouble. My doctor wants to get me into surgery within 3 weeks. That doesn't happen. All my doctor appointments were set up for me. That doesn't happen. I must be in really bad shape. And so all my power went out. I had no power for myself. I was not in my own agency whatsoever. I was just in total fear and being like, whatever, you tell me what I'm supposed to be doing because now I'm freaking out and obviously I don't know my body very well.
And that seems like a very honest reaction, right? Like, oh, they're
Absolutely.
the experts.
Right.
They're going to guide me. And so I have to hand that over to them, right?
Yep.
And I will hand over a certain amount of care or tending to if I have family or if I have friends or I have some sort of network that's going to help, I have to give up a certain amount to them too. And I'm very much not in a position to drive anything forward if going forward is the goal.
Right. And just, it's almost like you're, for me, it was, I think for a lot of people, brain shuts down. Like cognitively, I was not able to think like I would usually because now I'm in a fear space. And so I can't even well articulate what I need for support anymore because all I'm doing is focused on this date of this surgery and am I going to survive this cancer or not? Or what is my life going to be after this surgery? Or, I mean, there's just a million scenarios you can go down. That's where your mind starts to focus. And so you lose yourself. You lose yourself. And I think that's the biggest change that I felt for myself is I lost myself in my first round completely. And my second round, I was like, nope, not going to do that again. I am coming at this from a very different place. And I can confine like what I can do for myself to have agency in this scenario and recognize what I cannot control in this scenario and come at that from that lens and that perspective so I can do the best thing for me while also helping the people around me do what they can do and all of us sort of be in a good space of empowerment, but nobody's feeling like they have to do more or less or anything. It's just like we're all showing up for the best purpose.
Can you think of a few ways in which you credit some of that difference, some of the ways you approached it differently the second time that you think mattered?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, Enneagram, which we're going to be talking about, certainly helped me. It was a tool that really helped me hone in on, okay, here are the things that I know are important for me and that I need to find a way to connect with when I go through this journey again, and let other people know that this is part of what I need. It helped me express my needs better and communicate my needs better. Mind-body practices, which is part of the work that I do with the Enneagram, was really important for me. So, you know, having that date on the calendar and knowing that I had X amount of time ahead of time, like how do I put myself in the best position to be able to prepare for the surgery. So I was doing like literally meditations to prepare for surgery that put me in a state of what am I going to wear on the morning that I drive to the hospital? Who's going to drive me? What car am I going to be in? What bag am I going to have my stuff in? What things am I going to put in my bag? So it was like I was already playing out and putting myself in a calm state around, like, I am prepared to walk into this hospital and have this procedure. And just really communicative with my doctors and my family and my friends around who's doing what and what do I need from all of you. Just completely different experience for me.
You and I've talked in the past about how asking for what you need and asking for help is, we could spend a whole other hour talking about it, but how profound that really is for anyone trying to navigate through challenges and where it may be first seen as a point of weakness. And I could never, I'm being strong by not asking for others, right? That's the only way I can be strong is to be resilient and have it all come within me. But the idea of asking for help and being clear about what it help looks like actually brings so much more agency and impact from whatever you're asking for.
Right. And to the audience that you are serving via this podcast, women of a certain age did not learn how to ask for what they need, nor were they told they should do that. So, by nature of just how we've grown up culturally and societally, we have been told to keep down, press down anything that we need, don't ask for help. We're supposed to be able to do it all. And frankly, that's just not very good for any of us. It's not good for us. It's not good for the people who we love. It's not good for the people that are trying to help us as well. It can be a source of conflict, and yet it's kind of good conflict because it's creating some boundaries that are necessary for us to be able to be well.
I want to, since you've already teased into the Enneagram being so helpful here, let's kind of do an Enneagram primer first, if you can. Like, let's talk about what it is, how it's used, kind of its core structure. I will say, I did it myself. I was at a workshop at some point, like an hour-long workshop, certainly not like a weekend retreat kind of thing. And I went through it and I believe I know what my type is, what my number is, and that's all I have, right? So I'm as interested as people who know even less than me to hear kind of what's walking through it.
Well, I love introducing it. And so the Enneagram is basically a personality map. It's a tool you can use. I call it a map because it's very dynamic. So, having been in the corporate world for years, I did StrengthsFinders, Myers-Briggs, DISC, all very useful to me personally, in terms of understanding myself better. But when I met the Enneagram in 2015, it was for me a more spiritual tool. So I think it's a really wonderful tool for people that are in a phase of their life where they're looking for more meaning, purpose, like what am I a part of that's bigger than me? And so the Enneagram is this beautiful map that helps you understand, where you're coming from in the world, how you interact with the world, and how others might be different from you. So there are a basic nine types that we tend to all fall into, that we default into. But the intent behind that is to really grow beyond that. And so that you're not just only your type and that's all you focus on, but actually, where else can I move within the map to pick up some other skills and communication styles to be able to help myself balance myself out more so that I'm not just stuck in this type and that's all I know, because as we all know, strengths overused become limitations. So if I'm only constantly in this skill set, at some point it's limiting me. So the way I like to use it is really kind of breaking it down for people that don't know it well. It can be somewhat overwhelming. For me personally, it took me 3 years to figure out my type. And I say that was the greatest tool for me because it made me look at all the types and really understand everything. But I like to break it down into the three different centers of intelligence, which is basically how do we interpret and filter the things that come at us in the world. And by breaking it down into three, we all access these 3 points, but we tend to default to one the most often.
Okay, so start there. What are those three areas?
So the three centers of intelligence, there's the head center of intelligence, the heart, and the body center of intelligence. So basically, if you are, and each center has three types within it, but we're just going to talk about centers of intelligence today because, again, more accessible. So the head type, I think a lot of people can relate to because as a society, as a culture, we are very focused on knowing information, having results, quantifying everything. So the head types are, they come from a mental space. And so they are very much like, I'm going to gather data, I'm going to analyze, I'm going to get information. That is my way of filtering how the world interacts with me and how I interact with the world. And so their primary needs within the head center are safety, security, and certainty. And so they're gathering information as a way to create safety, security, and certainty for themselves. And the primary emotion that's within the head types is fear. So the reason they're looking for that safety, security, and certainty is out of some sense of fear, whether they know it or not. A lot of times there are people in the head center that don't even know that they have fear because it's just a constant running table underneath. But this is part of what's happening for them and why they interact that way. So then you move to the heart center, and the heart center is all about emotions, you know, kind of connecting from an emotional standpoint. So they're accessing information from the world based on feelings and emotions that they're having. They're looking for connection to other people, and their needs are around validation and approval and a need to be seen. And when that doesn't happen, or if they're not finding that, they have a sense of their biggest emotion is sadness or grief or sometimes shame. And so they are really looking for that connection piece to be like, am I validated by this person, by the way that we're interacting? Am I getting acknowledgement and validation for what I do by how this person is interacting with me? Like, how am I showing up with them? And then the third center is the body center. I am a body-centered person. And so my way of interacting with the world is all through gut instinct. I just have a sense. I can't tell you what it is. I can't put my finger on it. There's no quantifiable thing, but I just sense. It's a visceral sense that I do through the world. And what I'm looking for, my biggest needs are control, respect, and autonomy. And when I don't get that, my primary emotion is around anger. So anger can look differently for different types within that block, much like sadness and fear can look different for the different types in there. But basically, what I love about these three centers is we all have access to them, but we all tend to default to one. And again, same thing, if we're overusing that, if I'm so focused on control and independence and autonomy, and the way that I do that is through making decisions based on gut, and I'm ignoring looking for more information and gathering more information before I make a decision, or I'm ignoring talking to important people that might be part of that decision and connecting with them, what have I really done well there? It can create tension from a communication standpoint, but it also can set me up as a body type in a way that doesn't serve me best at the end of the day. Hopefully that makes sense.
It does. And I can see once you started talking about I'm a body type and it's control and autonomy, right? I can see how you were talking about, boy, understanding my Enneagram type really informed how I approached a new bout of cancer very differently because you were able to bring out that control and autonomy needs, but also understanding, like, oh, I actually probably need to focus a little bit more on the head and the heart. In an active way that's not my default type because I understand the vulnerability of just being too much in the blinders of my default type.
Yeah, and I think if you are just driving in that one center, you're like mowing people down that are from different centers, and they're gonna take it personally. You're not gonna understand why they're not, you know, doing the things you're asking them to do. And so it just creates such tension and communication issues that a lot of people scratch their head like, why don't they just do, or why can't they understand that? And it's like, well, we're talking from different places. We don't even recognize that we actually have different ways of interacting with the world. And so once you can just get those three things under some level of understanding, even if you have no idea what that other person's type might be or what center they're from, you can start at least interacting in a different way that could might that will likely make the communication better.
I think as a coach in my own practice, not only in my coaching business, but quite frankly, also in organizing, when I'm working with people about things they're struggling with, I am so often trying to bring to them kind of let's figure out self-awareness, like what are you bringing into this challenge? But also let's recognize that we're probably making assumptions about what other people are bringing into it based on our own worldview of how we would be handling the same situation. So it sounds very kind of that similar journey of talking to people is saying, listen, if we need to break out of something that feels challenging, we need to recognize our own position and kind of acknowledge that maybe the judgments or disappointments we're having in how others show up is because we are thinking that they are like us, but they are not.
Absolutely. It's such a bias that we, and again, it's like this undercurrent that is always running the show. So it feels so natural to us. It's like, well, everybody must be thinking this way, or everybody must be doing it from this way. And all of a sudden we run into these tension points, and it's like, well, I don't, what is their problem?
If I were to tell you the number that I think I am, could you tell me if it's one of those three?
Sure.
An eight.
So that would mean you were a body type.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
All right.
yeah.
I don't know much about it, but and I think something I've learned from you is it's not like you can just like the Myers-Briggs and the DISC and all the other tests and strength finders that are out there, you're not just spinning and answering a whole bunch of questions and like the calculation comes
No.
up and poof, you're an eight. It's there's perhaps suggestion, well, you might be this. How does that resonate with you? How does that feel? And so you kind of have to go through the process of figuring it out on your own with the guidance from facilitators or other tools. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think we're in such a society of like, well, if I answer these five questions, then it out pops the answer, and that's all I need to know. And I'm done. I'm done with the Enneagram because I know my type now. And oh my gosh, that just kind of like, breaks my heart when I hear people say that, because that is, you know nothing, essentially at that point. And frankly, a lot of people I think do that, and they want to get the quick answer. And then they're walking through life, if they do anything, walking through life with the wrong type potentially, because they're not willing to dig any deeper. And so now they're showing up really inauthentically and really in ways that are going to probably cause some concern and frustration, because they don't even understand why things aren't working the way they anticipate, because they're working from a type that may actually not be them. I mean, I'm 10 years into the Enneagram, and I always joke that I keep going to workshops on the Enneagram, even though I teach the Enneagram. I go to workshops on the Enneagram. I go to conferences on the Enneagram, and I always learn something new about my type because someone else has said it in a way, or I'm ready to receive it and hear it in a way that it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, my type is all about passive aggressiveness, and I just never saw passive aggressiveness for like 8 years of knowing the Enneagram. I'm like, I don't know where I do passive aggressiveness. And breakthrough year nine of like, oh, I see it everywhere now. Okay, got it.
Oh,
Really good for me to know.
yeah. Oh my gosh. Again, that self-awareness is,
Totally.
our greatest strength. So now let's combine the two, right? Because I know where you're at professionally now is you and with a business partner have started Enneagram RX, right? RX meaning like prescription. And because it feels like that combination of bringing your own strength and knowledge and expertise and passion, quite frankly, for the Enneagram and how the Enneagram helped you into helping other people. What is Enneagram RX?
So Enneagram RX, I do that as a co-collaboration with my business partner Patty Nelson, and she and I have known each other, well, we met in our coaching program actually. We took a death and dying class, living well, dying well class, was what it was called. It was the only class that we connected on, and then we were in our separate zones for the rest of our coaching program. We came back together, I think maybe in 2020, to do some Enneagram discussion groups for our local Enneagram association here in Minnesota. And as we were constantly having conversations to set up those discussion groups, we both started realizing, boy, our paths are kind of similar in terms of where the Enneagram has really started to play a big role in our lives. So Patty has dealt with an autoimmune disease for 24 years, and I've been on this cancer journey for 16 years. And we realized that once we brought the Enneagram and mind-body science, but Enneagram was a big piece of it, into our healing journeys, our healing just kind of like exponentially transformed. So we'd been sort of working at it from a conventional standpoint for so long. And then once we had a better understanding of our Enneagram type and how we function in the world, and recognizing these centers that we lived in, and trying to balance that out and not just default to one thing, both of us recognized that healing was in a completely different realm from what people are used to. And it's not just about what we talked about before, handing the power over to a practitioner to go fix us. You know, one of the things we both talk about is we both went to see chiropractors for years, and it was always because I'm in pain, fix the pain. And now we both go to a chiropractor to say, what you do is supporting what I'm already working on emotionally and from a self-awareness standpoint. So this is just an adjunct to what I'm already doing, but I'm not looking to you to fix the problem, you know, the back pain that I have. I know there's some emotional component to that, but you know, this is going to help the journey that I'm on. So we really, Enneagram RX is a play on this prescription idea, because our culture is so attuned to, again, handing over the power, give me a pop me a pill so that I can not feel, not experience discomfort, and just get on with my day and what I'm supposed to be doing. And so we've come together to work specifically with women with chronic stress, pain, or illness, and really try to switch the trajectory on where they've been. A lot of the women that we assume we will attract and have started attracting have been women that have tried a lot of different things, and they've gotten to this place of like, I don't know where else to go. I don't know how else to where to turn. And so this is really a collaboration to help women empower themselves through the lens of the Enneagram and mind body science in small communities. So we do these in small groups online. And really just change the way that change the lens that they're looking at their chronic condition through, so they can see it from a different perspective and take more ownership of like, okay, how can I show up differently in this relationship to this chronic condition so I can do it better? And yes, I can work with other people, but I'm also doing the work constantly with this in a way that makes me feel empowered.
What is the nature of the work that somebody is going to be doing with you in a workshop, whether it's a long series of meetings or kind of one sessions?
Yeah, well, always we introduce the Enneagram from the three centers of intelligence, because we don't expect anyone to know their Enneagram type or know anything about the Enneagram. If you do, great. A lot of times people that know their Enneagram type don't know anything about the centers of intelligence or really have applied it from a health standpoint. I think that's something that we're really unique in, is we're taking the Enneagram and applying it very much towards a health standpoint. So our workshops cover the head, heart, and body centers of intelligence, and really talking about what are they, how do they show up in a health environment, and how does that both help and hinder you based on whether you default to that center, and how might other people perceive you if you are defaulting to that center, right? So it's really can be eye-opening for people to recognize, like, oh, if I'm a body type and I have all this anger underneath, and for me it's kind of like, you know, like repressed anger, I'm pushing it all down, but yet I'm acting passive aggressively on some level. There's anger there. And now, as a person that might be a heart type, recognizing like, oh, that's an anger thing. No wonder we're not connecting very well. Is there a different way we might be able to change that? But for me, as a body type, to recognize there is anger there. I just assumed that this was, you know, I didn't recognize that anger. How might that be inhibiting my ability to, A, communicate well with others, to not get my needs met? Why are all these people not doing what I'm hoping they're going to do? Why do I have to keep hitting my head against the wall, saying the same thing over and over again? And then how is that affecting you physically? I mean, I think about all the anger that I had running the show in the background that I didn't realize was anger. causing inflammation in my body. For sure, it was causing inflammation in my body because it's all this like anger energy that was coursing through my every cell of my being. And so recognizing like, oh, I didn't get that orientation of my Enneagram center might be impacting the way that I am dealing with this physical manifestation. So it's a lot of this emotional pieces and elements of the Enneagram and how they may be showing up physically for you, and really helping women understand like this is part of maybe what's going on in your chronic condition. Not blaming at all, by the way. Not a you've done this to yourself at all, by the way. I do not look at my cancer journey as going, oh my God, I did this to myself. I look at it as, of course, this is something that may have happened to me because I was in a pattern of repressing all this emotion because of how I was dealing with life as a kid, and I didn't have other tools. And it wasn't until I understood the Enneagram that's like, oh, I can break out of this pattern. I don't have to keep doing this. And by the way, it is not good for me to do this because it's causing physical manifestations.
It's and when you talk about mind body, right, the
Yeah.
concept of that is so powerful. And there is so much that is out there that's a bit unknown. And yet, many people, I won't say everyone, but many people, we're going to go straight to conventional medicine for what's going on. How can we treat it? How do we get past it? But being open to so much more. Has had a profound effect, certainly on you, but I know on so many people. But that mind-body relationship around healing and navigating through challenges can be the difference between somebody having a positive outcome and having a negative outcome.
Yeah, and no disrespect to conventional medicine. We need conventional medicine. I just think it's really important that we recognize there's conventional medicine and there's other things, and we can complement them together to hopefully help our healing status, our physical health, our emotional health, our spiritual health, our mental health. All of those may be used together, but as you say, it's a keeping an open mind to these other things that may be able to help us. Because frankly, I love my oncologist. She's fabulous. We have a great relationship, but I don't expect her to help me spiritually. I don't expect her to necessarily help me emotionally or even mentally. But if I can show up in her office doing my work around my mental health, my emotional health, my spiritual health, it is likely that she's going to have to do less work for me physically because I am helping myself before I even get to her. And I think that is the beauty in nature of like, I'm part of the team with my healthcare team. I'm not just the patient, but I can actually be part of the team and help be part of the resolution or the solution to my health, as opposed to just being this person that gets wheeled into a surgery and, like cross your fingers, hope for the best that they know what they're doing. No, we can do more.
I think when we think about that goal of advocacy and agency for helping women who are dealing with chronic pain or chronic illness or chronic stress, and being able to get them to a point of agency focused from their own strengths, from their own area of intelligence, is about that team, right? Like, how do we get you to feel like you are the quarterback of your own team?
Yeah. It's so hard because we again, like back to culturalization, right? Like we are not told that we are the quarterback of our team. We're like given, 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 given. Women are just told to, like do things for everybody else, your kids, your spouse, your family, all of it. And that is, we have just been absolutely indoctrinated into that way of thinking for ourselves. So even this conversation might be stirring some really discomfort for some women hearing this because for many reasons. So I'll just emphasize again, None of your physical stuff is your fault. It is just a matter of can you bring some self-awareness to how your patterns might be playing a role in continuing you to be in this position, and what might you be able to pull out from this that might be able to start shifting some things. And it can be so empowering when women can figure out that they can do that. I laugh at myself a lot, by the way, through the Enneagram, and all of us Enneagram teachers are often saying, like, you have to laugh at some of the ridiculousness of these patterns because they're so deeply ingrained in us. And so, yeah, it's serious work to do this personal development, but it's kind of funny too. I mean, the ways that I do the little passive aggressive stuff here or there, or the ways that I need control of my environment at times, like, I have to laugh at myself and go, oh my gosh, there I go again. I'm looking for that, control in a way that I can't have that right now. So what can I do as an alternative right now, knowing that I don't have control? So, like, a perfect example is going into my second surgery when I had all this Enneagram information. I'm thinking, okay, I don't have control over much when I go into that surgery room, but what are some places I can have control over it? So, I can ask for healing statements to be read to me. I can ask for the kind of music I want to listen to. I can ask for having essential oils at the ready for recovery when I have nausea. Little tiny ways of me asking for things that I can control, and then finding a way to sort of surrender to the rest of it and be like, okay, these are literally out of your control, Kate. Like, find a way to manage that and find something to look forward to on in a different way that you can control. And that's agency. That's giving yourself empowerment as opposed to going into this feeling like you're really, like, negatively, energetically coming into this thinking that all is lost.
I think, listen, I hope that there's no one listening to this podcast right now who is facing a terrible illness, a chronic illness, chronic pain, chronic stress. I hope that more than anything. And my second hope is if they are, that they're listening to you in a way that has turned on a little bit of curiosity, or if they have someone in their life that they know has been struggling. There's a woman who's really been feeling like, I've been trying lots of things and I still can't seem to move forward in a way that feels like I'm making gains and making positive growth. I hope that they're thinking to learn more about finding out more about you and Enneagram RX. I wanna switch to the quicksand three and go through those questions I ask all of my guests, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk more about if people want to find more out more about these workshops. And I know you have some workshops coming up in February, and I want to make sure we talk about how people can find out more. But also, if somebody is not dealing, facing with some of those, and they just want to learn more about the Enneagram or that this kind of important work, how they might learn more or potentially work with you. So let's go to the quicksand three. So these are the three questions I ask all of my guests based on what I hope that surfing the quicksand brings to people and helping them get unstuck. So the first is, what is a tip or technique that you use to get yourself unstuck and actually do something that you've been avoiding?
That never happens to me, Kathy. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, it's funny because, of course, I couldn't look at this without looking at it through the Enneagram lens because I'm an Enneagram nerd, but I'm a body type. So for me, I have to have some sense of movement because if I am sitting in front of, let's say, a computer and I have work to do, and I just keep sitting in front of the computer to finish that work, and I keep sitting in front of that computer to finish that work, nothing's happening. So I have to get movement for myself as a body type. So usually I go for a walk. Sometimes now more than often I'm going down to my basement and doing a little dancing to, like, just shake some energy out. And that can often give me enough of a shift out of my kind of, like, brain thinking into my body that my body can release whatever energy's been built up. And then I can get back down and sit down and do the thing that I've been avoiding.
I love that. And I think I have a lot of people who have answered the question like, oh, I like to get out in nature. Oh, I like to go for a walk, right? That's been somewhere. And then I have people who are very different, right? Like, oh, I need a list. I need to get in my head and then do all the things. So it is interesting to think about, oh, I wonder if they all have different kind of head and heart and body types, and that's showing up for them as their technique to get unstuck.
Potentially, yeah.
Second question, if time and history and skill set and money and all sorts of things were not an object, what would have been a career or job you might have liked to try?
I think this was an answer of a recent person on your podcast too, but an artist. I have always been like dabbling in making cards and painting, and I'm always trying to do art classes. So if I could have made it as an artist, that would have been fabulous.
Yeah, we do have a few people who we've had that, and we've had artists who are like, "Ooh, I wish I could do artists, did not have to get paid, and just
Yeah,
not have to
right.
rely on money to feed my art."
Just be creative. Wouldn't that be fabulous? Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And then my final question, what is a way that when life gets chaotic, you recharge or hit the reset button?
So generally these days now, I recognize that I need to go do something out of my comfort zone sometimes, or just something to just shake things up. So what that often looks like for me is going to sign up for an art class, or take some kind of, like right now I'm doing African drumming and African dancing. I'm totally out of my comfort zone, and it is great to be out of my comfort zone because then my brain cannot stay in the way that it usually does. It just completely gets blown out of proportion, and I'm having to be in a way and resetting in a way that I couldn't necessarily do for myself in other ways. So yeah, just trying something new. I think that's what's I'm so grateful that I'm a forever learner because it allows me to go out and try something different that I've never tried before.
That is very fun. And, the idea that something unique like African dance would just show up on your horizon in some way, like, oh,
Yeah.
completely different. Sounds like that goes on the list.
Yes, I've decided, I told a friend the other day, I think that I'm going to keep doing this African drumming class because it might be the cure for dementia or Alzheimer's because it makes my brain have to think in such a different way than I'm used to. Yeah, I think it's a really good brain activity.
That's great. Okay, so let's come back to if somebody wants to learn more about the Enneagram RX workshops. I know you have some programs coming up. What should they know?
Yeah, so the easiest way to find out about Enneagram RX is go, we have a website, enneagramrx.com, and it's EnneagramRx.com. A lot of people don't know how to spell Enneagram, and I get it. It's a weird word. And that has all of our lists of workshops. We've got a workshop coming up on January 27th. That is an information workshop about this 6-week workshop we do for women called Reclaiming You. So if people are interested and want to come to a free workshop just to hear more about that, that's happening January 27th in the evening. And then we've got a couple workshops coming up that start in February. I think one starts February 3rd and the other one starts maybe February 23rd, I believe it is. And so those are also available. We do one-off workshops as well that always integrate Enneagram, and you can look for those on our workshops page on our website as well.
Right. So if somebody's listening to this maybe a little further into the future, how often do you offer workshops like this, do you imagine, over the course of the year?
Yeah, I think we'll probably offer. So we're doing two in February and hope to fill both of those. And my guess is that those take a 3-month period. So we'll probably do them, a couple more times throughout the year. And then in the midst of that, hopefully we're going to be doing a retreat in 2026. And then obviously one-off workshops that are both in person in Minnesota, but also online. So we've got a couple different ways people can find us.
Great. And what if they just want to learn more about the Enneagram?
Yeah, if they just want to learn more about the Enneagram, there's a couple of sites that I would, credible sites that I would send them to. One is called CP Academy. That's for ch short for Chestnut Pius, PAEs,
Okay. And we'll put that in the
Academy.
show notes too.
Perfect. And then the Narrative Enneagram is another great, credible resource for people just to poke around. It's lots of free information on both of those websites that people can just get started understanding a little bit about the Enneagram.
Great, Kate. Thank you so much for all of that. And thank you for sharing your personal story, your really unique personal story, and how you've taken control over it, but now doing it in a way that you can share those great lessons with other people, especially women who may feel like they have no other options in the world to get past where they're at today with some really difficult life situations. I'm sure there are people who are very grateful to have you in their lives, whether they're the person going through that illness or the person who's trying to be part of their team.
Thanks, Kathy. I feel like it's a privilege to be able to do the work. So I feel really fortunate to be able to offer this to other women and hopefully help them on their journeys as well.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I think we can all agree that there's so much in the world out there that we don't understand, but we can believe in our hearts and our guts that when we're open to it, it can make a difference in our lives. And I think it's amazing how Kate and many others have found power through the Enneagram as a tool and a vessel to help them frame, understand their patterns, break patterns, and bring about really critical change in their life, in their health, in their future. The work that Kate is doing, I don't know that I've ever heard anybody doing anything else like this. There's a uniqueness to her story, her partner Patty's story, and what they are doing together in their business to change lives for women. And again, if this is you or this is someone you know and love who you think is ready to be open to something a little different, maybe you'll check out Enneagram RX, or you'll share this episode with them and say, "I'm on your team. How can I help?" Thanks for being here.